FSN Radio.
It's all about what's next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's March 19th, 2018. Well, we've been watching the student protests. Amazing that students are so well organized. They're able to just charter buses, even though they don't have credit cards, get hotel rooms. All of this, man, students have come a long way since I was in school. Hey, as always, join the discussion. Be part of the conversation. Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. So we've got all these gun protests taking place all over, spontaneously breaking out, of course, but the truth is often different than the perception. And when we want the truth about guns, we always talk to John R. Law. And John, welcome back to the show.
Good to talk to you again, Kerry.
So these spontaneous demonstrations, like these kids have all to do to get up in the morning to get to school on time, which they find very challenged to do even that. These demonstrations just are so well organized. Who can believe that high school students that are having trouble with basic literacy are actually able to put all this together?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear Michael Bloomberg's group is doing all the legwork for organizing this, handling the PR, you know, putting together talk. My daughter is in high school, and her school participated in this. The principal there had assured the parents and the students that it was not going to be a political thing, that it was just going to be purely a memorial for the people who died in Parkland. And, of course, that's not what happened. The speeches there were obviously professionally written speeches that the students read. And it was pretty obvious that they were written by the same people who were organizing a lot of this stuff. So look, the question is, what do we do on this? And I'm incredibly frustrated. To me, the answer seems obvious what needs to be done, but a gun control advocate wouldn't have stopped this attack. They wouldn't have stopped any of the mass public shootings. You look at the number one proposal that Bloomberg's groups keep putting forward, and that is these background checks on private transfers of guns. That's the number one thing President Obama, whenever he spoke about mass public shootings, brought up every single time. And it was the thing that was pushed in the speeches at my daughter's school. And yet there's not one mass public shooting this century that would have been stopped or years beforehand if they had had this federal law on background checks and private transfers. You know, I think they have completely different reasons for why they push this. I think they want to make it costly for people to be able to go and get guns. And I think there are lots of other issues there where mistakes are made in the permitting, in the background check system. But, you know, or they talk about this assault weapons ban. That's something that put up again recently, where they have a list of 200 guns by name that they want to ban. I mean, we've been through this before. We had a federal assault weapons ban that was very similar for 10 years. There's been lots of academic work that's been done on it. People just don't find any benefits in terms of any type of reduction in crime or mass public shootings. You know, at least it would make some logical sense to go and say we ban all semi-autos.
Yeah.
But to go and ban guns, 200 guns or whatever number they want to pick different than that, but the 200 that are listed in the proposed legislation, you know, when they're functionally identical guns that just look different on the outside, this doesn't make any sense. Now, I believe I know why they don't want to go and advocate, or at least generally don't want to advocate a ban on all semi-automatic guns. Those are the most commonly owned guns in the United States. Civilians themselves recognize very clearly the benefits that they have for defending themselves with semi-automatic guns. You know, the alternative would be manually loaded guns. And, you know, if you have to fire multiple shots, either because you miss or because there are multiple people attacking or because you wound but don't incapacitate an attacker, people may not have the luxury of time to manually reload their gun if they're being attacked. And so I think they want to stay away from that, at least right now. But, you know, in so much of the rest of the discussion here, Florida just raised the age limit for owning a gun for all guns from 18 to 21. So you have a horrible crime committed by a 19-year-old. It's understandable that the reaction is, well, let's just go and ban guns for people under age 21. The problem is there's like no rational discussion of the costs and benefits of there. So on the one hand, you have a 20-year-old woman who's being stalked. What is she supposed to do now? Or let's say you look at the mass public shootings. Only 10% of the mass public shootings have been done by people under age 21.
It's frustrating for sure. And it often seems like the cure has no relationship to the disease whatsoever. And you just see all these politicians
right.
run around. They have to look like they're doing something, right? Oh, we must
I want to do something, but I want to do something that's related to these attacks. I mean, that's what's so frustrating. Somehow, if they propose things that wouldn't matter, they are seen as caring. But I want to do something that matters. So the Florida attack was yet again another mass public shooting where general citizens were banned, an area where general citizens were banned from having guns, these gun-free zones. And since 1950, over 98% of the mass public shootings have taken place in those areas. At some point, you would think it should be obvious to people. You know, if you live in a state like Florida, I mean, first of all the mass public shootings in Florida, every single one, whether it be the Pulse nightclub or the business shooting that occurred last year or the Hialeah restaurant shooting because they served alcohol or other places, every single one of those has occurred in a place where citizens weren't allowed to protect themselves. The Fort Lauderdale airport shooting, Florida is one of only five states that completely banned guns at airports. And the thing is, it's just not the fact that this can't be random, because if you're in a state like Florida, you know, 97-98% of the state, you're able to go and carry your permit concealed handgun. To the extent that these attacks occur, they keep on occurring in those tiny areas within the state where people aren't allowed to defend themselves. But if you read the statements that these killers leave, you know, diaries or videos or whatever, I don't know how much more explicit that they can be in terms of explaining why they picked the targets that they did. They wanted to go to a target where people didn't have guns, because they'll say explicitly, it makes it easier for them to go and kill lots of people before somebody's able to arrive on the scene with a gun.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Unfortunately, it is very true. And nobody wants to admit all this, John. But look, the concept of actually arming teachers seems repugnant at first glance. But really, how bad is it?
Right. Well, I mean, look, I'd like to live in a world without violence. It'd be nice if we didn't have to do these types of things. But people have to understand, this isn't new. I mean, people tend to think whatever the rules are now, that's the way they've always been. Well, first of all, states that had concealed carry didn't. Until you get to the 1990s.
Right.
But, you know, since then, states have had to pass rules to allow, after the Federal Safe School Zone Act was passed, Gun-Free School Zone Act was passed, to allow people to carry. And you have 25 states to largely varying degrees allowing people to carry. A lot of states, it's only maybe a half dozen or a dozen school districts that allow it. But you have other states like Utah and Alabama, where if you get a concealed carry permit, you're allowed to carry as a teacher. In Utah, about 5% of teachers have a concealed carry permit, and about 10 to 12% of the support staff carry regularly at school. So, you know, there's so many hypotheticals of things that might go wrong if people have a carry concealed. You know, the teacher losing control of the gun or accidentally discharging the gun. Or, you know, if you have a mass public shooting, you had Senator Rubio in that CNN town hall that he did was saying that he had talked to relatives of disabled teachers, and they were worried that if they had a gun, that when the police arrived, that they would accidentally shoot the permit holder. Well, the thing is, we don't have to guess about these things. We have lots of experience. We have not only the experience with the teachers carrying in these places where there's been not one case, despite decades of experience, where a staff person or a teacher's had their gun taken from them or they've misplaced it or whatever. But you also can look at mass public shootings that have been stopped. If people go to our website at crimeresearch.org, we have dozens of cases in recent years where, according to police or prosecutors, a permit holder has stopped multiple people being killed in what would have been a mass public shooting. These don't get anything more than local news coverage, and many times they may only get one or two local news stories. But one can only imagine that the coverage that they would get that the permit holder wasn't there and hadn't been able to stop the attack. Some of these are very dramatic cases, like in South Carolina, a volunteer fire department was having Children's Day, where they were giving kids rides on the fire truck and having ice cream and playing various games. And a man came in with a rifle, started firing. Fortunately, there were two volunteer firemen there who had concealed carry permits and were carrying, and they were able to stop the attacker. I mean, one can only imagine the international news coverage that would have ensued if they hadn't been there. But yet you still only got a couple of local news stories. It's one of these examples where the local sheriff said that there's no doubt in his mind that those firemen hadn't been there with their permits, that many people would have been killed.
Exactly. So what about, John, the fact that there was an armed sheriff's deputy on the scene who cowered outside of the high school? They knew about this guy for years. They wanted to Baker Act him, meaning involuntarily commit him, but nobody could get their act together to do it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stupid things in the Florida law, but the good thing is that you can commit these known troublemakers who are making threats and are displaying violent inclinations and actually committed acts of violence. You can stop these people. You can institutionalize them, which is what should have happened with Cruz, but everybody was asleep at the wheel.
Right. Well, I mean, there are lots of things going on there. The first general point is you need to have a backup plan if you can't be sure that you're going to be able to identify these people and do something about them. Now, you know, with regard to the officer that was there, what I don't think people appreciate generally is what, if he had actually been there on the scene, what a difficult job somebody in uniform has. It's almost impossible job, because you put somebody there in uniform, somebody there with an assignment of them, shoot me first.
Yeah.
When you see these attacks and an officer is actually there on the scene, they're the first people that are shot at, you know, whether it be the Pulse nightclub in the United States or, you know, even overseas. Person, that's the magazine that had the cartoons of Muhammad. The first person killed there was the police officer who was sent there to guard the magazine offices.
Yeah, Charlie.
Istanbul last year, at the nightclub shooting where you had a lot of people killed, the first person killed there was the police officer who was stationed there. So, but, you know, the thing is, you know, it's one thing to have, in this case, somebody outside the building having to have the courage to come in. You would hope that any of those four officers that ended up being at the scene would have had the courage to do that. But it's another thing, if you're there in the building and somebody's coming at you, you don't have any other choice but to go and defend yourself at that point. If you're a teacher in a classroom and somebody comes in with a gun, you know, it's your life or death whether or not you go and defend yourself. But the huge advantage of having it concealed is that these killers don't know until they actually attack who they have to worry about.
Right.
I just say generally, you know, we have about 17 million Americans who have concealed carry permits. And, you know, they, if you're outside of California and New York, you're talking about 8% of the adult population has a concealed carry permit. But you would never know. You go to a restaurant or a mall or a grocery store or a movie theater, you know, there's a very good chance that somebody near you has a concealed carry permit and is carrying. But you would never know. It doesn't bother you. The only time you would even know that who has that is if an attack occurred. And, you know, they had to go and defend you and themselves in that type of situation.
And it happens.
The same thing would be true.
Yeah. And it happens all the time. Every day of the week it happens, but the mainstream conceals it. Anyway, John, you made some really good points. I know you want to find out more about John, what he's doing. John, how do we connect with you? How do we sign up for your mailing list?
Well, thanks. Well, people can go to our website at crimeresearch.org, and our email list, which I know you've been getting for years.
Oh, years.
There's a little link at the top that people can click on to go and put in their email to go and get our research and other things that we put out.
Hey, which is great, and I highly recommend that you sign up now. If you got any questions for John or myself and want to be part of the show, just email us at kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. John, thanks as always. You made some really interesting points and points that make a lot of sense. Common sense has been lacking from this entire debate for too long. Let's try to bring it back down to earth.
Well, thanks for having me on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.